Blog Talk Radio.
Live to see it, friends. You're listening to Fast Forward Radio on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Fast Forward Radio is an audio production of The Speculist. You can find us online at speculist.com. That's S-P-E-C-U-L-I-S-T.com. Or go straight to the blog at blog.speculist.com. At The Speculist and on Fast Forward Radio, we are all about a convergence of emerging technologies and emerging possibilities, which is at the heart of this, the greatest period of transformation in human history. Our world is changing in ways that are hard to predict, sometimes even hard to imagine. And Fast Forward Radio is your guide to an astounding future that lies ahead, and it will be here sooner than you think. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Happy New Year, Stephen.
Thank you, Phil. Happy New Year's to you as well.
How did you wind down the holidays? Everything go nice? Have a nice New Year's celebration?
Absolutely. Had a great time. In a very tame manner. When you have four kids, it's impossible to get a babysitter on New Year's Eve. You just can't do it, you know. And so I celebrated with the little guys and had a great time with the wife and the guys and other similarly situated parents who joined us. So we had a good time.
Well, that sounds nice. Actually, my wife and I, of course, are My older daughter was out having a party with her friends, younger daughter, long asleep. And so it's the two of us watching, Carson Daly on, sitting on the couch watching him with the Shih Tzus, right? And he's doing the countdown with the ball dropping and that whole thing, you know, mm-hmm. Times Square. And we watched it live on MSNBC, so we saw it happen at 10 o'clock our time. And we said,
yeah.
Okay, well, that's the dog new year. That works for the dog.
Did y'all go to bed before midnight?
Yeah, we called it a night right there.
Gosh. I make, you know, I gently rib my father and my mother for, you know, basically calling an evening about 7:30, 8 o'clock, you know. I mean, I tell them that they, you know, you rang in the new year for Greenwich, England, and that's good enough. And, you know, so.
Now, after going to bed, I played iPhone Scrabble in bed probably till 10:45, 11 o'clock.
Sometime. Oh, okay. Well, that's much
better.
I don't want
you to think that I'm no fun at all. I'm still pretty wacky and... You know, I like to live it up and everything. Well, we've also got our chat host, Sally Moore, out in the chat room. Back, very glad to have you back, Sally, and a happy new year to you and all our friends in the chat room. We're looking forward to all of your commentary as we proceed with our program this evening. And Stephen, I see no reason why we shouldn't just bring out our guest right now. Hmm?
Absolutely.
All right. Well, we are pleased to welcome back PJ Manny to Fast Forward Radio. This is actually her 10th appearance on the program, so
yes, we counted it.
We did check. We've done the math, and she's our first guest ever to make it into the double digits. So big congratulations are in order on that one. PJ, of course, is a writer and a futurist. She brings a unique perspective to Fast Forward Radio. She's a leading voice in the Humanity Plus movement. She's written extensively on H Plus topics. Having previously been involved in movie development, she was involved with Hook, It Could Happen to You, Universal Soldier, a lot of cool movies like that, and writing for TV, Hercules, The Legendary Journeys, and of a special importance to Stephen, Xena, Warrior Princess.
Absolutely.
She is also our official Hollywood correspondent, and PJ, delighted as always, welcome back to Fast Forward Radio.
Thank you, gentlemen. I love being here, and I can't believe I'm so old that I'm your 10th appearance.
Well, you're here on quite a bit. It's not like it's 10 years or anything, you know.
Now,
I appreciate it.
Did we count the times that she's co-hosted as a guest appearance or as a co-host appearance separate from the guest appearances?
I just counted everything as an appearance.
Oh, okay, okay. So.
This is where, actually, Brian Wong claims he's been a guest more times than PJ.
Yeah, but, all the technicality, yeah.
So, you know, these two, they can...
I give it over to Brian.
They can fight it out, you know. I'm just saying that she's been on the show more times than Brian has. So,
well, We'll book her for next week.
We'll
try
to make him a guest host.
Yeah, that's right.
So, you know, keep trying, Brian. That's something to shoot for there in your life. So we've got a lot of fun stuff to get into, and I know I sent out some topics. I think I might skip around just a little bit. I'm going to ask a trivia question to begin. This should be easy, but it might not be. What is the significance of today, January 5th?
January the 5th. You got me, Phil.
It's holiday related.
Okay.
Does it have anything to do?
It's not the Annunciation or what?
You're thinking of Epiphany, but that's tomorrow.
Epiphany, yeah. Thank you.
Does it have anything to do with a famous scientist?
No, not what I'm thinking of.
Okay.
That would be cool. If you have something, of course, please share. But,
no, yeah. I think it might have actually been yesterday. Sir Isaac Newton's birthday is in dispute because of the changeover from the Gregorian to the Julian calendar. Exactly. And so they can either celebrate it on Christmas Day, or they can celebrate it. It was yesterday.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. But no, this is something else.
Okay.
I don't see any guesses in the chat room, so I'm going to go ahead and tell you guys. Today is the 12th day of Christmas.
Okay.
This is the end of the Christmas season, so it's cool that we're having our second holiday special here this evening. That's why I'm
oh, okay. This is the reason we can bring out what we want to bring out later. Okay.
I'm putting down a base here. I'm laying a rationale for our special music that we've got coming up in a very special edition of Tales of the Paranormal. And shoot, now that I brought it up, maybe we should just jump straight to that. I don't know. What are you guys game for some?
Well, if you don't bring the music on, I'm just going to start to belt out the 12 Days of Christmas. So.
Okay, well, that's almost worth the risk, but that might be kind of fun. Because I want to see, you know, everybody's good to 5 golden rings, but, man, people get messed up there in 7 and 8. I want to see.
If I don't have the lyrics in front of me, I'm going to get messed up, yeah.
But with that threat in mind, I think, yeah, let's go ahead, Stephen. We're going to let's take a little journey into the world of the unexplored with Tales of the Paranormal. I assume you didn't have that queued up because we didn't talk about it. Oh.
Chupacabra by an open fire, Sasquatch nipping at your nose, mutilated cattle being strung on barbed wire, and folks looking up for UFOs. Everybody knows a blindfold and an anal probe help to make the abduction ride. Tiny graves with their eyes all aglow are waiting in your room tonight. You know they want to take your seed to breed a master hybrid race. That's what they need. And every alien child is gonna play at making circles in the crops by day. And so I'm offering this simple phrase. I hope you'll take it for your own. Although it's been said many times, many ways, trust no one. Trust no one.
You know, kids, there's an excellent chance they've already gotten to your parents.
Trust no one. We're not alone.
Wow. Oh, my.
All
So this is a really special show because not only is this PJ's 10th appearance on the show, but I believe, I'm pretty sure this is the first time that the phrase anal probe has shown up. I think.
I'm betting it's the first time that that phrase has ever shown up in a Christmas carol, so, you know. Okay. Oh, gosh.
I was corresponding with a buddy of mine. He's a filmmaker. He kind of as a hobby. He works up in Redmond. He works for Microsoft, and he leaves comments on the blog sometime. He has an interesting handle. He's called Blacknail. So you might, Stephen, you might remember seeing comments from him from time to time.
Absolutely, yeah.
Years ago, he and I had this idea for a TV show, and the idea was Monster Quest. Okay. I mean, it was exactly what they're doing now on History Channel with Monster Quest. I don't know if you guys watch Monster Quest, but, you know, you totally should. It's like the complete idea. And just because, you know, he and I never did anything with it, they, like, gave it to these other guys and let them do it. So we were swapping holiday greetings, and he was talking about, you know, how much fun it would have been. And I felt like I needed to cheer him up, so I actually wrote that as a, like, a little special holiday greeting to him. And he liked it so much, he said that it probably ought to be recorded, and Stephen agreed. So I'm actually blaming you, Stephen. You really gave me permission to put it on, and you actually uploaded the
That's true. That's true.
The audio. But I think that little alien is kind of a ham. I don't know. He sort of overpowers me.
Yeah. I was going to ask you about that background. That was an alien in the background. Okay.
Yeah, you just need to know how to approach them, you know, and well, where to find them, right? Those are the two. Actually, you know what? I did that all in Audacity. They have a feature in there called WAP. I think it's doo-wop or WAP-WAP or something like that, and you can take. Basically, it was just me doing this. to the tune, and you could just alter the audio a little bit, and
that's funny.
You get this this totally alien effect. So that's my little alien paranormal Christmas carol, and I wanted to actually get into a little bit of a discussion about the you know, I think it's also the first time probably that the phrase mutilated cattle has appeared.
I don't think they were in the manger.
Yeah, no, they were all okay, right?
They were fine at that time, yeah.
Yeah.
But
I don't think they were harmed. So a couple of things I've seen over the last couple of weeks. I have to admit that I'm kind of a paranormal buff. Okay, we have this feature on the show. We do sometimes Tales of the Paranormal, and I actually do enjoy watching some of these shows about the paranormal on History Channel or sometimes on National Geographic or Discovery Channel will show them, which is really ironic, I think, that you see them on these, like, science TV stations dedicated to science. But I saw a movie. I don't know if either of you have heard of this. It's called I Know What I Saw, and it was a documentary, and I guess it was just done in 2009. This guy has compiled, like, the best of the best, the creme de la creme of UFO witnesses and UFO sightings. So he starts with the basic assumption that, yeah, 95% of this is just complete nonsense. But here are the really hard ones to dismiss. Okay, so he's got, you know, it's like airline pilots and, you know, Air Force personnel. And he had actually assembled, you know, very respectable, you know, French government officials and some guy from Belgium and a guy from Turkey, and they'd all gotten together at the National Press Club in D.C., and they'd all given their stories. And you watch this, and you go, well, you know, these are some pretty interesting stories. These, you know, don't quite fall into the, you know, I got out on the back porch and looked out, and there was something blue in the sky, and so, you know, next thing you know, I woke up 3 hours later or something like that. I mean, They're credible and well documented, and you go, okay, well, I'm prepared to say that there's something anomalous there, and we don't know exactly what happened there. Seems to me those people are telling the truth, and that there's something interesting happening there. Not ready to say, therefore, alien spacecraft have landed, right? Because I think, as we've discussed on the show before, that theory makes no sense anyway, right? So I'm watching that show, and I came up with a kind of a, well, that's interesting, you know? Well, there it is. Okay, so some of these people have had interesting experiences. Two nights ago, there's another show. It's on Nat Geo, I believe, and it was called Apocalypse Island. I guess you guys have not heard of either of these shows. Okay, so
we're listening intently, though.
Apocalypse Island. This, I swear, it's all going to come together. This guy has done research and some interesting stuff about the Mayans in there. You know, the Mayan calendar and the world's going to end in 2012, right? You guys are up on that.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Have you seen 2012, by the way?
Yes.
No. Have you?
Yes, I have.
How'd you like it? How was it?
It was definitely destructo porn. You know, wow, how many cool things can we mess up? Great to look at, wonderful images, marvelous visually. A little light on the story.
Mm.
I had a lot to destroy in 2 hours.
So they needed to get to that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. No, I haven't had a chance to see it yet. But so you guys are familiar with the theory. The Mayan calendar ends December 21st, 2012. And then, according to the movie, I guess that's when the world ends, right? So,
right.
Well, this guy, the guy this show Apocalypse Island was about, is a researcher and kind of an archaeologist, kind of a freelance archaeologist, sort of an Indiana Jones type he is portrayed as in this documentary. And he meets up with this documentary filmmaker with this amazing story. He has discovered an island in the South Pacific that is the only place in the world where both the, you know, I don't know what they are exactly, conjunction of Venus and the total eclipse in 2012 will be visible. So if the Mayan knew about this place, this would be like sacred holy place to them, okay? And he says, I've discovered this island. I mean, it's a charted known island, but nobody lives there and no one's ever done anything there. And there is a large Mayan monument on it. And we need to go explore. We need to look at this Mayan monument because I think the key to the whole 2012 thing is on this island. So the whole story is the guys putting together the expedition. It's, you know, great setup. It would make actually a pretty good, like, real movie if something interesting were to happen once they got to the island, because it's like, okay, so the filmmaker and the renegade archaeologist, they're going to Apocalypse Island. They're going to they're going to see the, you know, ancient mysteries of the Maya. They're going to learn the whole thing. And along the way, I actually learned a few things, like how far the Maya had spread. I didn't realize how far into South America and up into North America their influence actually went. So that was kind of interesting. And it's not impossible that they ever went to this island. So there's this little bit of plausibility around the whole thing. It takes them, you know, out of a two-hour show, it takes them like an hour and 40 minutes to get, well, not to the island. They get to the island in about an hour and 15 minutes. But to actually finally get to the thing, and it's like, here's the monument over the hill. There it is. It's standing there. And I look at it and go, dude, that's a natural rock formation, okay? You know, this guy's insane, all right? This man is crazy. And, of course, the filmmaker's going, well, yeah, I can, you know, because, I mean, he's heavily invested at this point. And
God.
What's he going to say? So contrasting those two pieces, I throw it to you guys. Is it okay to be entertained by the paranormal, or should we just really push it to one side? Is it always a waste of time? What do you think?
Should we be complete skeptics all the time, or just
I'm pretty much a skeptic all the time. Even in saying that there's something interesting about those UFO stories, I don't think there's aliens landing or anything like that. I just think there's something going on. Right,
I think it's very hard not to be entertained. Because I don't mean it in a facetious manner. Clearly, it's very hard not to be entertained because it all touches on things that we care about, and it's a mystery, and it's very archetypal, all these stories. You know, you can't help but be entertained. I find it quite innocent. I mean, as long as you're not running your life on it, I don't see the problem.
You know, I count Coast to Coast as the major influence of this of us putting together this show way back when.
And yeah, actually, it is in a way.
And you know, I basically driving across, driving to meet Phil for the first time at the Rocky Mountain Bloggers Convention. How many years ago has that been, Phil? Was that 2004? I think that was 2004.
Yeah, 6 years ago, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And so, listening to that on the way and going, you know, it would be, you know, the things that we talk about at the Speculist would be fun to talk about in a radio show kind of like Coast to Coast where we're talking all these weird things, but make sure that the weirdness is based in reality better than this crap, you know.
Yeah.
And so it's entertaining and it's just best to, I think, you know, we can live compartmentalized in some ways, which is not a terrible thing. Be entertained, enjoy that stuff, and then on the other hand, have a more serious side where you go, you know, it's all just make believe, and we know that little green men are probably not making crop circles. Why would they? You know, so we can
because
be
they
skeptics.
Like entertainment too.
Yeah, we can be skeptics, but at the same time,
bizarre entertainment.
Yeah, I mean, we all know that, you know, the Area 51 is, you know, they probably don't have. There is a place called Area 51, but they don't have flying saucers there. But how much fun would it be to talk about Area 51 if we didn't consider that?
Right.
You know, and right. And would it have shown up in the latest Indiana Jones movie had it not been this mythology around it?
To me, even more fascinating is when we do get information, real, actual, solid, information. Nobody cares. So 2 years ago, the French completely opened their UFO files.
Right.
And they were very nervous about it. They thought it might create hysteria. Nothing happened. And yes, their servers crashed, I understand, a few times because millions of people wanted to look at the data. But in all those files, there were a lot of things were not explained, including entire plane loads of people who witnessed things that flying next to their plane and things like that. But regardless, the information, which is French government information, nobody could care less.
Yeah.
It didn't entertain anybody.
That 95-5 ratio comes from the official report published by the French government. That's what they said. 95% of this is just crazy. 5% of this is really hard to explain. And in fact, I believe their panel came to the conclusion, and this is where I part company, one of several places where I part company with the French government, that the most likely conclusion is that the extraterrestrial explanation, that's where I kind of go, wow, really, the French government figured this or decided this, which is kind of interesting. So, yeah, you've got a government actually saying this. And, yeah, you're right, PJ, no big panic, right? It's just, you know, it's there and nobody really, it doesn't really make a big difference, does it?
No. No, until they come down and say, take me to your leader, I think we're not in any stage to panic.
Right, yeah. I think we're well short of a panic. So, in fact, the French head of whatever the French version of NASA in this documentary suggested that the U.S. government likewise open up all its files and come clean. But,
well, then,
maybe that would be
time.
A panic because then you got the, you know.
Well, that's interesting because around the same time I saw Larry King interview three retired former either NSF or NASA officials who said they've all come forward together, kind of holding each other's hands, to say that UFOs absolutely exist. They have proof. They talked about the French files. They said, we know it's in the American files. And my favorite thing was the skeptic who came on Larry King to debunk them was Bill Nye, the science guy.
Oh, right. All right.
That's cool.
Which I thought was hilarious. But, and they took it quite seriously, and you looked at these men's faces, and not a single one of them looked like a fruitcake.
Right.
Yeah.
They truly believe what they're saying. And, you know, these were people who were honestly in a position to know. Who knows?
Yeah. Well, there's just three of them, and the rest of them don't say that or are too scared or whatever. So, yeah, I think stuff like that it's interesting. That's the bottom line.
Exactly.
If you're interested in science and you're interested in the future, you can't help but just find it a little bit interesting, I think,
yeah.
Even though most of it's fairly ridiculous. Well, let's not spend any more time on this. We should shift gears and become all about the topics that we really talk about here on Fast Forward Radio. I want to talk about the future, and we're going to go around, and each of us is going to give a in their view, what's the biggest accomplishment towards the future, biggest achievement towards the future that occurred in 2009, and what's your projection for the biggest thing that will happen in 2010? And how should we do this, Stephen? Should we all do our what happened in 2009 first and then our what happens in 2010 or one point?
Well, I would like to do it together because, well, that would work out best for my example. So.
Okay, well, that sounds like Stephen has volunteered to go first. So let's
okay, all right. Well, you know, the iPhone was not an invention of 2009, but I think 2009 was sort of a, I guess the iPhone-ification of the United States, at any rate. I mean, and I'm not just the iPhone, but also, BlackBerry, anything that basically where you have the internet with you, and you have the ability to, take pictures, you can have your calendar with you, you can get on Facebook, you got your music with you, online shop, that I think has been adopted and widespread adoption basically this year was I think the biggest development of 2009 as far as technology goes. So
yeah. Well, in fact, didn't the App Store open in 2009?
Yeah.
So
it did,
there you go.
And
yeah.
they have sold a bunch of those apps, many to me. So it's been very, very successful for Apple.
Well, like I said, iPhone Scrabble has pretty much made my life complete. I didn't know what happiness was until I actually beat the hard setting a couple days ago, and I was like,
"That's pretty cool." That's
Whoa,
pretty cool.
Congratulations!
I was drawing some good letters. Is all I can tell you.
Well, my wife is some sort of a Scrabble genius, so y'all pretty much. I feel a grudge match coming on between you and her at some point.
All right, yeah, we got to do that.
Yeah.
Hey, is she on an iPhone?
Yeah, well, she can use mine.
Play on our phones. Oh, so cool.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, excellent. So, what now? Push it ahead. What's going to happen in 2010?
Well, I believe that the iPhone is so dominant this year, but I don't expect that to really continue. I think that it's the Google Android phones will continue to push into the market. BlackBerry's not going away, and we're going to see a continuation of that. I also think that we'll see something come out in this coming year. The Apple. A pad, basically. We've had lots of in the past. I have lots of attempts to make what amount to a pad type thing where there's no keyboard. You just write and do things like that. Lots of attempts by Apple and others that have not been so successful. I think that what we're going to end up with is something that looks a lot like a 6x8 iPhone. That works in much the same way, but with more functionality, and that's going to be a big thing this coming year.
Okay, well, I think that sounds very plausible. That sounds like, and it's a nice set you've made. So yours are kind of thematic. It's all kind of about the smartphones.
Exactly.
Okay, cool. What do you got, PJ?
Well, I have two things that I thought were, for me, the most fascinating things of 2009, and again, one that kind of feeds into 2010. For me, I looked at a lot of things in retrospect in preparation for this show, and the one that kept on standing out for me is a series of successful gene therapy human trials that, for the first time, really show in a number of different diseases the extraordinary strides they've taken in gene therapy over such a variety of disease that you can't, they have nothing in common except the gene therapy.
Right.
That, I think, is possibly the most amazing development that seems to have all that data seems to have coalesced this year. And we really are looking down the barrel of this as a viable cure for countless diseases.
It's kind of the comeback for gene therapy, isn't it?
Because
it
absolutely because
had this
for
big
the last
start a few years ago, and then
20. It's been. No, sorry, 10 years that
mm-hmm.
it was just under a cloud because of one high profile death of a young man.
Yeah.
So that I'm thrilled by that. I think that that's certainly in terms of ending suffering is one of the most successful things I've seen. In terms of fun stuff, for me, it's the brain-computer interfaces, and that's not even so much fun as profound.
Mm-hmm.
We're really seeing a huge development this past year, both in the ability for interfaces to communicate brain to computer with speech, to then create speech for people with locked-in syndrome, et cetera, but even down to the marketing of things like the emotive. Or my favorite one, it was a toy I saw demonstrated by, of all people, Joel Garreau, which subsequently was bought by Lucasfilm. And it's called a Jedi Mind Trainer or something like that. So basically,
awesome.
it's an EEG that you put on your head, and you have to make a ball go up and down by using your thoughts.
Oh, wow.
Big toy this year, yeah.
Yeah, it's a big toy this year. So I love that these things are toys first.
Yeah, that's kind of neat,
isn't it? Extraordinary. Joysticks and Jedi mind trainers. But this is going to be the whole idea of neuromarketing, neuroproducts. This is the year that people are going to start to see a real movement and through this entire decade.
Okay. Those are very exciting developments. I think about that Jedi Mind Trainer, and I think how long before it's the keyboard, right? I can just look at the screen and type.
Well,
they're already
doing that for locked-in syndrome with people with ALS, et cetera.
Right.
But right now it's still very painstaking. It's still slow. There's no nimbleness to the systems. But they've proved, they've got a proof of concept that it's absolutely possible, and there are people currently using them as we speak. But because they're still very slow, and when I look at the interfaces, it's kind of like you almost want somebody from Apple to come in and design these interfaces for them.
Right.
There's a basicness, an awkwardness to these interfaces that, it's what happens when scientists invent interfaces as opposed to designers who work with how the human mind works with an interface. I think when you link those two, it'll be extraordinary.
Wow. Big stuff. Cool. All right. Well, I've got two in both categories. I hope that's okay. And I just want to say we're going to stick with this because I see something interesting happening over in the chat, which is someone said, hey, what about for the decade? So you guys be thinking, either have a biggest accomplishment for the decade or what's going to come in the teens, and we'll talk about that too. But,
okay.
Do pay attention to me as I'm telling mine because very important. So for my big breakthrough, I think it's got to be the rapamycin treatment for mice, this life extension breakthrough wherein this immunosuppressant drug was given to it might have been rats, actually, anyway, some kind of rodent, and it gave them the mouse equivalent of like an extra 13 years of their life. Okay, so this wasn't calorie deprivation or any of that kind of stuff. This is like a direct treatment that resulted in a direct life extension, something that could be applied to human beings. But certainly, it's like the first time this kind of a treatment has been applied to a mammal and produced that kind of result. So I think that is huge. And looking ahead into 2010, Gregory Benford's company, Genescient, they're completing their clinical trials in the early part of this year, and it's possible that their their product might become available in 2010, which, Stephen, I believe fits in with one of the predictions you've been making. Is that not correct?
Yeah. How many years ago has it been now? I said about 3 or 4 years ago that I thought that the first treatment, the first generation of life extension treatment would show up in a decade.
Yep.
And that's been about 4 years ago. So I'm saying now, in about 6 years,
yeah.
We'll see. Now, I'm going to hedge my bet a little bit by saying it might not be marketed as life extension medicine. It
mm-hmm.
might just be that life extension is the reality of whatever treatment it is for, say, you know, somebody with a diabetic condition or somebody who's overweight or this or that. But it turns out to actually extend life beyond what a normal life expectancy would be. So that's still my prediction, that the first generation of life extension will show up that quickly.
Well, I think we're on track. It looks to me like we're
yeah.
on track for your prediction to come true. And I think there have been exciting developments in 2009, and it looks like some really cool stuff coming up in 2010 as well. Now, I've got another very self-serving set that I want to give, and that is, as far as big events that occurred in 2009, Stephen, I got to say that as far as helping people get directed around the future, helping people to kind of open their eyes around the future, The World Transformed, our special series last summer, is
yeah, that's right.
It
was that big of a deal. Yes.
If
you haven't heard it, go back and pull it out of the archives. It's awesome.
It's still available. Actually, I do have a special archive of that I've been putting together, and we're going to make available via the web, because I think some of that holds up pretty well. But looking into the next year, we haven't decided exactly what we're going to do. But all I can tell you is, if we took it up a notch with The World Transformed in 2009, we're going to take it up four or five notches in 2010, and keep watching this space. We'll have details as they come, but we're going to keep raising the bar and keep doing what we can to get people informed and interested, informed about and interested in the kinds of not only possibilities that we face, but the kind of realities that are actually occurring around us. So that's kind of my prediction and my pledge for kind of my New Year's resolution, I guess, for Fast Forward Radio for 2010.
Awesome, awesome. Well, I really need to bring out one more thing about 2009, especially considering who we have as our guest tonight.
Okay.
We have had what I think is really a milestone in cinema this year. And that would be the movie Avatar. I think on par with adding of color, perhaps, to movies however many years ago. The technical advance that movie represents is that important, I think. And we'll 10 years from now, we'll be, or 50 years from now, we'll be looking back at that movie and saying, yeah, that was an important point in cinema.
And I think the only reason you singled out Avatar instead of Bitch Slap is because it technically didn't. That's a 2010 movie, right?
That's right. That's right.
Bitch Slap is the movie of the future.
Yeah, that's right. That's the coming one. Yeah, absolutely. That's a good point. I think that we really did cross another threshold with Avatar. And if time permitting, we might talk a little Avatar here before the end of the program. But I want to go around one more time, and
okay.
just real quick, Stephen, can you say what do you think was the biggest thing to happen in the aughts, and what will be the biggest thing to happen in the teens?
I want to pass this in a cowardly manner, pass this to PJ for just a second while I
okay.
think a little bit more.
Okay. For me, the aughts was absolutely decoding the genome.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right.
That was the beginning of us starting to know ourselves in an actual actionable manner. For the teens, I'm still going to stick with neurotrends, because I think tying in with what Stephen was saying about the iPhone and the iPhoneification, or the application of communication, we're increasingly putting off into the cloud, our thoughts, our dreams, our experiences, our memories, and by this continued externalization of who we are, it's only going to accelerate dramatically in this decade. So that there's you in your physical body, but there's also all this stuff about you that everyone has access to whenever they feel like it. And that, at the rate this information is growing, which is exponential, by the end of this coming decade, this decade, we're going to have so much information about everyone available. We're going to have to figure out what to do about that.
In terms of protecting people's privacy, you mean? Or
combination of protecting privacy, I think it's going to change society. It already is changing society.
Yeah.
Someone was joking the other day that, you know, in the 20th century, it was about being famous for 15 minutes. In the 21st century, it'll be about being famous every 15 seconds.
Wow.
Or having 15 minutes of privacy in your life.
Right, wow, that'll be a blessing.
Yeah.
You know, it's our relationship with our culture, our society, our community, our families, everything is changing.
It really is, isn't it? I mean, in a lot of ways that we're only just sort of beginning to see.
Exactly.
And to understand, and I think starting to cope with that really is going to be huge. What do you got, Stephen?
Well,
we give you more
so social networking. I agree completely with the importance of the genome, but when it comes to just how society is developing, I think Facebook and the other social networks are huge and are a huge part of the future. Just think about it. Put it this way: we don't lose touch with each other anymore. I mean, even the jerk you kind of would like to lose touch with, you know, I mean, that you wouldn't mind just kind of putting him or her behind you and moving on with your life, is still got, you know, I mean, he's still trying to befriend you on Facebook. And
he calls you every week and says, hey, what do you want to do on Fast Forward Radio?
Yeah, exactly. exactly.
Yeah.
I think that in some ways losing touch with folks is become passe, and that is a mixed blessing. I guess as a lot of technology is a mixed blessing, but I think there's, you know, always more good than bad. So I remain optimistic about it.
Okay, and then coming into the teens, what do you see?
Okay, obviously Moore's Law is going to be with us. I feel like it's going to be with us at least another decade. And when Moore's Law gives way, when we're no longer able, you know, to write, features any smaller on an integrated circuit, then there'll be the next thing come along. And so, it's hard to say where that takes you though, because who would have foreseen Facebook 10 years ago or 20 years ago? Well, we're going to get 20 years of advancement in the next 5 years, and so if I go out on a limb and say this is, you know, for sure going to happen, then that'll look so passe in about 5 or 10 years. I guess the biggest thing is that our ability to predict is going to become shorter and shorter and shorter.
Yeah, I think you're right. And actually, I was just looking through the chat. Facebook was mentioned there, and that was actually going to be mine. I was going to steal it from the chat as far as the biggest thing. But really, to look at what happened in that decade, I started blogging in 2002. Before I had the Speculist, I had another blog, and before I went away for my holiday break in 2009. The second to last thing I had to do at work was write a blog post at my regular job, you know. So it was this interesting, you know, the 7-year window, actually about 6.5-year window, where an activity went from counterculture to absolutely mainstream. And it was a lot, and that's part of this whole, like, blog, Facebook, Twitter, dig complex, this whole social network complex, where things go from way outside to completely inside in a very short period of time, because it took us a long time to have a blog for the product that I support in my day job. But now we do tweets, we've got a Facebook page. You know, I mean, we do the whole thing, right? And the rapid rollout, the rapid implementation of social networking, and the rapid acceptance of it, and the rapid mainstreaming of it, is really remarkable when you think about it. It's really unlike socially anything we've ever seen. I mean, how long did it take to get from, I can't even think of a good analogy, you know, a Beatles song into like a car commercial, right? That had to have been like 25, 30 years, right? But blogging went mainstream, you know, in 4 or 5 years. Facebook went mainstream in about 18 months. You know, things we're getting from the outside to the inside a lot faster than we used to. And I think those, in fact, the boundary between those two is going to become somewhat less meaningful than it has been in the past, just because we're going to be moving through things so quickly and moving into new things so quickly. Looking ahead, I'm going to take another clue from the chat room. The prediction that Sally makes is that in the teens, everyone's going to catch on, and people are going to become singularitarians. And I think there's a lot to be said for that. I think there's a good argument to be made that we really are on the verge of a big awakening in terms of the general public realizing just how big of a threshold of change we stand at. And I think that's going to change a lot too. I think that's going to have profound impact on our entertainment. I think it's going to have a profound impact on education, on business, on government. I think the world is really going to change when the people in the world start to get a handle on how much the world is going to change. I think that the becoming acceleration aware is really going to impact us in ways that it's hard to get our heads around now, but that are going to be huge.
I've got another.
Okay. Keep them coming.
Okay, Kindle electronic books. Electronic books, not just the Kindle brand, because they're going to have a lot of they're going to face a lot of competition. Barnes & Noble now has a device called the Nook that just came out, and I understand Sony's in the game as well. Right now, Kindle is very dominant. It's the Amazon product, and I have it. I love it. It's it allows me. I mean, I carry my bookstore with me everywhere I go. Not only with the Kindle device itself, which I have, but also on my iPhone, I can read the same books. Download, you know, if I buy a book on the Kindle, I can read it on my iPhone because I have that in my pocket all the time. Also, can read it on my computer, and so that level of convenience is remarkable to me. That I can. Have a book. You know, somebody mentioned a book to me, and 30 seconds later, I can literally be reading it if I like it well enough to grab it. So that's a big deal, and I think I have said that there'll be more electronic books sold within just a few years, and I stick with that prediction than paper books.
I think that's going to be big. I have a question about the Kindle. You use the actual Kindle device, right?
I use the Kindle device. I use my iPhone, and now, and as of about 3 or 4 weeks ago, there's Kindle software available for PCs, and the Max Kindle software is due out here in a week or so.
Okay, PJ, do you use Kindle at all, or?
My husband promised me an e-reader for my birthday and made the big mistake of saying, "Honey, you have so many tech friends. Why don't you ask them which one we should get?"
So that discussion is ongoing, huh?
Which means, of course, I don't have one yet.
Right.
And my birthday was in September. So.
All I can say is you're going to love it when you get it. And right now, Kindle is dominant, but you know how that'll be. At some point, they'll rest on their laurels just a little bit too long, and somebody will pass.
Well, I'm curious also about the Bleo, which is Kurzweil's new reading device. And that should be coming out momentarily. What I like about the Bleo is that it is more like a computer screen in that it's full color. It has, I believe it has hyperlink capability, although I'm not 100% sure. It has certain capabilities that I had wished the Kindle would have.
Yeah.
So I may lean more towards that, and if I can really hold my breath long enough, I may wait for the Apple tablet because that may answer all my prayers.
Oh,
yeah.
There you go.
Okay. Well, I'm sure there'll be Kindle software available for it because it's already on the iPhone. So yeah, that'd be cool.
Right.
Well, I'll say the feature I need is, and maybe the true Kindle has this. I don't see it in the iPhone. Is to be able to highlight text.
Yeah, right? It has that.
Oh, you can? Yeah.
You can definitely do that.
Because I'm reading hard copy books, and I'm going, oh, where's my highlighter? Oh, where is it? Oh, this one's all smudgy, you know. And it's like I want to remember, particularly, you know, for things we're doing on the show, right? It's like
yeah.
I want to come back and ask them about this and that kind of thing. So that's an important feature.
Absolutely.
And you don't get your fingers all blue, which is great.
You know, a funny thing. When I first bought the Kindle, just about every, you know, book that I bought, you could turn on a feature that basically the Kindle would read to you.
Mm-hmm.
Very, you know, woodenly, and
yeah.
in a way that, you know, basically it was of no use to you unless you're blind, and
right.
you learn to adapt yourself to hearing this very machine speak, you know, to you. And it's so funny because these various book companies, these various publishers got together and said, no, Amazon, we're not going to allow this any longer. This is going to cut into our audiobook market.
Oh, wow.
And you can't do that anymore. And, I mean, they all got together, and one of the rare times they could agree on something, and said, no, you can't do that anymore. So, I mean, pretty much you buy a book now, and that feature is turned off on just about any book you buy now. And I thought to myself, well, you know, that's ridiculous because, you know, nobody really uses that feature except for maybe blind people or you know, something, you know, it's just not used because it's just so bad. But, you know, thinking about it, 5 years from now it won't be bad.
Right. But the protectionist rent-seeking, actually a little bit of rent-seeking would have been better. What they should have done was say, okay, well, we'll have two license models, right? And if
yeah.
you want to use that feature with a book, yeah, you've got to pay a little.
You pay
less.
A little bit more, yeah.
And you get the full thing, but
yeah, and that,
they
and
never
I,
talk.
They'll
about,
work that out.
I suspect
that they will work that out at some point. But at this point, they don't have a lot to worry about. But it's I know that they're looking down the road for. It's you know they're thinking, yeah, right now we don't have anything to worry about. Nobody's going to, you know, forego buying the audiobook for that. But you know, 5-10 years from now, it could be a much different situation. So I guess that's what they're thinking, but yeah, what they need to do is just have a model where you buy it, just pay a little bit more for the audio capability.
Right. Well, listen, we have to leave this because we're almost out of time, and there's two things that were on the agenda that we absolutely have to get to. One is a reminder for those listening. We did three shows leading up to the Foresight 2010 conference, which is going to be in Palo Alto, California, January 16th and 17th, 2010. Please go to foresight.org for information. We've had just a great series of shows leading up to tonight and leading up to the conference, talking with Jay Storrs Hall and with several of the presenters at the conference. If you're at all interested, if you're in the area, or if you think you can make it to the area, we cannot recommend that event highly enough. Now, PJ, we wanted to get a quick readout from you on the Humanity Plus, H-Plus event that you attended a while back. I heard you had great things to say about it.
I have to say, keep in mind, disclaimer first, I was formerly chairperson of Humanity Plus, but I'm no longer. I have nothing to do with the summit. It was possibly the single best future-oriented conference I have ever attended, ever.
Wow.
It was so well done. It was so informative. It had such an array of speakers. It was just a lot of fun and beautifully put together by both the board of H+, their executive director, and an organization called Mindshare LA, who also helped, who do the equivalent of a monthly salon in Los Angeles, usually in downtown LA. It's very young, it's very hip, and it's very cutting edge of culture, science, arts, you name it. And they brought that attitude to this presentation, and just did a fabulous job.
Now, was this H Plus the magazine or Humanity Plus the organization? I guess we
Humanity Plus the organization.
Okay, so this is Alex Lightman running this deal. Is that
yes?
Is that...
Yes, and the board of Humanity Plus, and they really did a marvelous job. I was actually surprised how well done it was, and I hate to say those kinds of things, but that's how good it was. They surprised even me.
Do they have it scheduled for 2010? I assume they're going to have another one coming up.
I'm assuming it was extremely successful. I know they were. Tech Zulu was doing a live video feed at the time, and I think they got some crazy number of viewers at the same time in the tens of thousands or hundreds of. It was crazy how many people were watching simultaneously.
Hey, is some of that available? Can it be watched? On demand now, or did it
yes,
all just
it can. I have found that going through the Tech Zulu files is very hard. Most of them are not labeled, like who the speakers are. They're done in 15-minute blocks, so no matter where you were in a talk, it would stop, and then just you'd have to figure out where the next one was to link it up. So I don't know if anyone's organized that yet. When they do, it will be a very good document. But if you go on to the, it's hplus.eventbrite, that's B-R-I-T-E.com site, you'll see a link for Tech Zulu, and you may be able to get to it through there.
Okay, we'll be sure and put a link to that in the show notes. And Stephen, let's see if we can't get that event on the calendar. We'll do a countdown to the Humanity Plus event in 2010 as well as for the Foresight Conference.
Absolutely.
Gentlemen, you were greatly missed.
Yeah, and
it'd be
maybe
fun
we'll
to
split
be there.
The difference. One of us attend each of those two events too. We'll have to talk about that. Well, as always, PJ, the time has just absolutely flown. Great having you with us. Great way to start the year here, our first show of the year, and you're on. So we're looking forward to your next 10 appearances on Fast Forward Radio. have a fantastic year, and come back and visit with us again soon.
Thank you so much, guys.
Thanks.
All right, Stephen, what do we got going on music-wise this evening?
Music-wise, it's Mexico by Carbon Leaf.
Carbon Leaf, a band we have heard from once before, I believe.
That's right. They had Lake of Silver Bells on sometime last year. We played that song, and this is another good one from them.
Okay, so Mexico. And thank you to Sally. Thanks to you, Stephen, for putting the music together. Sally, all our friends in the chat room, thanks for being part of the show. Everyone listening live and everyone listening via recording, thanks for being part of Fast Forward Radio. We look forward to being with you again next week. And until then, live to see it.
I've never tried that hard to see. A palm tree swinging lazy in the breeze. Perhaps I looked away too many times, just ignoring all the signs. Riding high on a temporary vine. Life and love are messy. Practical minds breeding practical lives. Leave it all behind. The ocean breeze, the palm trees, and the sunshine. Excuses that a pair of eyes can't hide. Perhaps this paradise is my decline. Riding high on a temporary vibe. Life and love are messy most of the time. If we were sober, we'd know that this is real beyond the fear. Go.